Yo, take it personal.
You're checking out Take It Personal with my fam.
Yeah, yeah, y'all.
Checking out the Take It Personal radio show.
Yeah, it's your boy Foul Monch. You already know what it is.
Right now you're checking out the Take It Personal show.
Nothing but the real hip-hop.
Hip-hop. The way it should be.
Yo, what's up? This is Cool Keith, a.k.a. Dr. Octagon, and you're checking out Take It Personal with my
DJ 360.
DJ 360.
Full cipher for that ass.
Now,
for that
now,
ass.
Now, now I'm cool with my man.
Kevlar.
And my man. My man. They playing nothing but that authentic, classical, boom bap shit. Check them out.
Check it out. This is Marco Polo.
Yo, check this out. This is Soul Brother number one, Pete Rock.
This is DJ Premier. You're live and direct through the speaker.
And you're checking out Take It Personal.
Take It Personal.
What up, though? This is Merce.
This is DJ Muslim Cyber Seal.
This is Dell, the funky Homo Sapien. You are checking out Take It Personal.
And introducing in this corner,
The one they call Aaron Wade.
Chilling with my people.
And over there,
Roger the announcer. That's it. No famous. That's it. Roger the announcer.
Take it personal. When my people spinning that fly shit, you heard? Hip hop, stay winning. Yeah.
Here's another interview with Tajay from Souls of Mischief.
So we have another spectacular guest on this High Road Tribute Show. We have the man Tajay of Souls of Mischief. What up, Taj?
Hey, what's happening?
This is the first question I've seen to ask everybody, and it's the High Road Days coming up on the 2nd of September, right?
Yep.
What does that day mean to you?
Oh, man, it's just huge. It was a fan-inspired thing. Somebody was like, 9-3, that should be High Road Day. And so we threw it first about, 8 years ago now at the block party. And it's just grown from, something simple that we sort of did with our friends. I think Planet Asia was there the first year, Grouch, cats like that. And now it's grown into the biggest festival in Oakland, as far as Oakland produced. And we turned it into a whole weekend this year. So, with comedy shows, silent disco. We got a 45 session with Dante Ross and Breakbeat Lou and Diamond D. So we got a lot of good stuff going. So to me, it's just heartwarming to see how something that started off as really our fans inspired has turned into something that's now grown to a whole weekend of activities and probably keep on growing as time grows. I'm looking at it like I want it to be like South by Southwest or something eventually, where High Road Day, the show, is just a part of it. The whole weekend we got, tech and, cannabis stuff and music stuff and all kind of panels and stuff. So to me, it's awesome that something that started in the mind of our fans has grown to something this big.
Has it turned into something where the artists now reach out to you and say, hey, man, you guys are doing it big. I want to be a part of that. Put me on next year.
Yeah. It's about 50-50. If you look at our festival lineup, it's not that same generic festival that everybody's throwing. It looks like the Spotify playlist. You know what I'm saying? We got local cats. We got classic dudes. We got people probably who are just now breaking internationally. And we got people who are completely unknown and, across genres. And, of course, got to make sure that the representation is just sort of the full gamut of hip-hop, not just like what we would be considered like lyrical backpack rap or not just like local open street rap, but all kind of stuff, man. So we got everybody this year from, Benny the Butcher and Conway to, Spice One to, it's nuts. The High Road. It's 30 acts, so it's crazy,
It's an eclectic crew. You even have Yuck Mouth and Pete Rock, which I don't think anybody anticipated that. That is a ridiculous collabo.
I'm still trying to wrap my arms around that.
So, you think about it, that to me is probably the most High Road Day group. it explains it perfectly. Yuck Mouth with Pete Rock.
It's crazy.
So if you want to know what High Road Day is about, it's stuff like that. We got Diamond D coming. We got Boot Camp Click coming, so... It's gonna be sick.
It seems like Oakland had its waves. Like the 90s, Oakland was really riding hard. It started with maybe Oakland sports, and then and I was telling Dell and Domino, 91 to 94, I think the High Road crew had a crazy dominance in hip hop. You had the Oakland Athletics, you had the High Road crew, and then it seems like in the past, handful of years, Oakland is really, really making a name for itself yet again, whether it's, with the dynasty team of the Warriors to the Giants. And you guys now with this festival, which is the eighth year, right, that you guys are doing this. So yeah. It's almost like a resurgence of Oakland, if you will, the Bay Area, in music.
Yeah, I think in music, but everything, in tech, there's so much expansion. Our skyline has been completely changed in the last 10 years as far as expansion. I'm an architectural designer also, so I'm designing a lot of homes, a lot of buildings coming up. It's like crazy growth, a lot of gentrification too, but a lot of it is actually, I think, good, positive growth, and Oakland is growing with it as far as the music scene, et cetera. So I think it's becoming a place where you could come out here and pick up the vibes and sort of create and not kind of be tainted by the industry yet, which is a double-edged sword because we have no industry there either. You got to kind of do it independently. But, Too Short and 40 and us, we kind of, and even like the Jello Biafras and the punk rock cats kind of blazed the way as far as being able to build your own. And then when you have this tool like the internet that just allows us to contact, everybody on Earth at once, the day your record drops, it's just like the sky's the limit. So we're glad to be part of this resurgence, but we can't, it's not just music. I say it's tech. It's the cannabis scene. It's the housing. Everything's growing. Even though the Raiders and the Traders are moving to Vegas and the Warriors are moving across the bay to San Francisco, it's still, I think that moving forward, it's going to be one of the big cities in the 21st century.
It's funny how the Raiders did the whole like sneak thing on like Ballers, It's like they set their agenda up in a TV show.
Yeah. Wish them the best. Fool me once, right? But this is the second time they dipped on us. I'm trying to figure out my team. I ain't really even messing with the NFL right now. So it comes at a great time for them to dip.
Yeah.
Because I'm not missing nothing.
I hear you. Listen, you talk about lifestyle and kind of the architecture thing. You've often talked about like scenery being like the fifth member of Souls. And I was actually pleasantly surprised to see you like continuing the whole like legacy of Hiro with the concept of you wanting to design that hotel in Panama. Can you let our listeners know what your intentions are with Hibiscus Gardens Hotel, the concept behind it, and like, the project, where it's at as of now?
Yeah, well, it's about 19 rooms. I bought it functional. So we got 19 rooms and a restaurant. We got our own beach. We got horses. It's down in Santa Catalina and Panama. So it's a nice spot. I've got enough room to expand. I want to start throwing festivals there. And also want to build like a recording studio, a sort of art lab that has visual arts, pottery, ceramics, et cetera. And make it so it's like, hey, it's an escape for those who want to escape. But for those of us who are creative, it's somewhere where we can go and put records together. I'd love for bands to come out there, stay a month and leave with some really inspired music because they're in an area that's inspiring.
It's your Shangri-La, right?
Yeah. But it's also, for me, getting out of America has been very important, especially in the recent years, And exposing my children to something different. I just came back out there. I graduated, my eldest daughter graduated from college. So I brought my whole family out there just so they can see look, the reality that they're promoting on TV and that we hear about in all these songs and everything is just a slice of it. You can surf every day and, do culinary stuff and create and paint and lead, jungle expeditions and this kind of things too. So it's something where I don't want it to be just on some paradise, but like an alternative or a way to go and recharge and get away from sort of this concrete jungle, but not something where it's just like, hey, come out here, it's paradise all the time. I think the balance is great because there's a lot of work to be done in the urban areas and in the, in the cities all over Earth.
Yeah.
And it's work that we have to do. I've got kids, so it's like, hey, if we don't kick in the high gear soon, it's not going to be much left for them to even inhabit.
No, I hear you. And being a Stanford guy, I wonder where your daughter went to school.
She went to Humboldt. She went to Humboldt. They got a really good art education program, so she wants to be an art teacher. She's really artistic. She actually makes music as well. Her name's cool. Siri. And she's got her own following. She got more social media followers than me. Shit.
They know how to do it. So
it's cool for her to be far away but still close. And I think she got a great education there because she was able to carve out her own sort of program and also be close enough to home to still get the Oakland vibes, but far enough so that she doesn't have to be feeling like she's stifled by like my legacy or me watching over her or anything silly like that.
So you're talking about music. So let's bring it back to music. So what I want to discuss first things first is when you dropped 93 until one, how old were you? And two,
I was 18.
You were 18.
It came out. I was born in 75. So when it came out, I mean, I recorded when I was 17, but it came out when I was 18.
So that's a common theme. It seems like every one of these high road debuts, you guys were around 18. Cash was 18. I think when he wrote it, it was 17. Dell was 17, 18. And you guys were 18 when you dropped 93 Till. So being that young, did you know that this album was going to have such an impact?
I don't know how to explain it. Well, we assumed that it would be bigger than it was, right? You know, I mean, when you make records, you're like, oh, this is the biggest thing ever. You know, like, we weren't coming from a, we're going to be sort of 20, 30 years later, like these underground champions and, you know, like underdogs and all that. We assumed it was going to be the biggest thing out, you know? But in that time, hip-hop was not the biggest thing out, so it was big from a hip-hop perspective, right? So, I mean, I'm not saying I expected us to have this sort of longevity, because at 18 you don't even understand, you know, you think somebody that's 24 is a dead man, you know. but I did think that it would have it would touch people, because when the, you know, when the track came on, it touched us and we came from the heart. I'm not saying that to say I expected it to be as big as it is now. Like, it's, I mean, we were in movies, you know, that have nothing to do necessarily with hip-hop in general, and commercials, and, you know, you hop off the plane in other countries and you see Hyro signs on the side of the freeway. You never really expect those small things. You know, it's kind of like, it's crazy. And, you know, when people come and they name their kids after you, or the fact that, like, everybody in our crowd now is, like, 25, you know, or born in 93. Whoa. Like, you don't even think that that's crazy. Not the possibilities you think about. You just think about, oh, a lot of people are going to hear my song on the radio. So we did think it was going to be big, though. I don't want to act like we're surprised that it was, that it bubbled how it did. But, you know, when you're 30 years after, and, you know, we're still headlining our own tours all over Earth, you know, and I think a lot of our contemporaries aren't necessarily. It's kind of a great thing, and it's a different kind of validation, because it kind of lets you know that, hey, if you strive to make sort of a music that will stand the test of time, that's not fad based, that's not just about whatever's hot at the moment, then it will have legs that can take you a lot further than, say, some stuff that's just like what's hot right now.
Well, first off, that particular track, 93 Till Infinity, is probably on most people's top 10 of all time of all hip hop. But what most people don't ever talk
about.
Yeah, what most people don't ever talk about, and from my perspective, I was a film major at the time, was the video you guys shot for that. I mean, the fact that you guys, you know, used like the Timberland boot to do the wipe on the edit to the next scene. I mean, you guys crafted like real precise edits, and the way you shot the video. I mean, there was some real great film techniques at the time that no one was doing. So I actually have to give you guys props for that action, for that video. It meant a lot to me, you know, watching that shit, because it was the first video that I felt took the time to scout out location. If you're filming and watching, like, you know, four or five guys running around an area, that just seemed to have a cohesiveness that most videos at that particular time didn't. So props to that.
Yeah, man. Well, we can't take the credit for that. That goes out to Michael Lucero, rest in peace. He had the vision. And like we said earlier, you know, the scenery is kind of the fifth member of Souls of Mischief, right? So we're living in this beautiful state. We were some stoners, you know, or whatever. And we wanted to show people kind of, you know, like we would have to go. It wasn't like now where trees was legal. We would have to go way out to spark a joint up. You know what I mean? Like on a long hike or something. So I think it was really cool that Lucero said, hey, well, we're gonna make the scenery be the focus of this. You know, we're going to get away from the urban sort of gritty stuff and then bring it back to the urban too, with the cars swinging and, you know, just being in the town, et cetera. So, yeah, I mean, I personally hate videos. I grew up listening to music. Like, I didn't have TV till I was in sixth grade.
Right.
So I've always been disappointed by videos. Like, I don't like when a song comes on and everybody starts doing the dance that somebody did in the video. To me, they kind of stagnate people's imagination. But for some reason, this worked in the opposite way. You know, it opened people's minds up to the possibilities and to what's out there and to the beauty that's out there. So I'm really happy that it worked out in that way, because, I mean, I mean, if you think about Tajay, my franchise, I'll be making videos, man, because I definitely would rather you just listen to me and imagine something yourself. But I think I'm going to move with the times and start doing visuals, because a lot of people now don't just listen to music, they watch it. Me personally, like, I go to concerts and close my eyes. You know, so it's a different, I just have a different way of interacting with music.
I think that comes from the type of guy you are. I mean, you're a little more into that, in that place where you're just, you know, cerebral and you can do that. And maybe it's drugs, I don't know. But from but you know, at the end of the day,
you finally
got off weed. You're not doing the six and six anymore, huh?
Yeah, I don't even blow the trees no more, man. It's too much now. It's everywhere. But I think also just the time that I came up, like, I didn't have cable as a kid. You know, when I hear it being Rakim, I thought Rakim was like a 7 foot tall, you know, super buff guy, the way his voice, you know what I mean? Like,
sure, voice.
So it's just my it's the same with a book, you know, how the book is always better than the movie, because your imagination is just awesome, right? Everybody's imagination, I think, is very powerful, a lot more powerful than we think. So I'm just, I think from that era, like, I grew up just reading a lot of books and not really seeing things. You know what I mean? Like, I didn't really even go to movies much as a kid, because there weren't a lot of movies for kids, really, you know? I mean, that may be talking about my age, too. But I don't, you know, I don't knock it. I just want to figure out a way to present my music so that it doesn't inhibit people's imagination. I mean, you know, like with the rap noir thing, for instance, I just, you know, I rock in the mask. I try to keep it like a sort of simple black and white palette so that the stories I'm telling, people can imagine what it is when I'm speaking, rather than me having to show them, because it's you know, our lyrics are I mean, we speak in sort of double speak and all that kind of stuff, but when we tell stories and all that kind of stuff, it's clear too. I think I'm from an era where we just listen to music, you know, like, I've never seen no Santana video, you know what I'm saying? No, or no Earth, Wind & Fire video. I mean, I started seeing Earth, Wind & Fire videos as an adult, you know? Yeah.
To me, they both coexist together, but that's, you know, I was a visual medium guy. You know?
No, I mean, I think it's dope. I think, like for instance, like what Lucero did with 93 to Infinity, we couldn't have done that. That was his vision. And so when people have that talent and they see something, or something in the music speaks to them a certain way, it works. But sometimes it does, or a lot of times it doesn't, or it just falls short. When I, you know, like when I see visuals for songs I really love, I'm like, eh. Anyway.
Well, you guys came out at a very prominent, very important time. And 93 to me is my favorite year in hip hop. And I don't want to keep going back to 93, but my point is you've always been an intricate part of Hyrule, especially Souls. And I think after you guys really had, when I say you guys, I mean, and I'm speaking in terms of Hyrule, you've had that dominant 91 and say 94 run. Things went a little crazy. I know Cash got dropped. Dell was having,
we all got dropped.
Dell was having issues with Elektra. You know, you guys put out your follow up, your sophomore album. Right.
Yeah. I was gonna ask you, Tajay. I mean, I know you got tremendous feedback from the first album, like people losing their minds over it, and then you got this tremendous pressure to deliver on a second one. And I know I was one that was completely waiting on it, and it's a totally different sound. What kind of feedback did you get? How did you feel about it? What did that do for you guys in that whole time period when you dropped the second album?
Oh, man, I think when you start and set the bar at a certain level, or have people's expectations at a certain level, then it's kind of, you know, you're not trying to make, like, we're not trying to make 94 or 95 to infinity.
Can't remake it.
If you listen to every Hyrule record, every single Hyrule record is different, like every single one. Mm. If you listen to Casual's first record, to Casual's current record, his catalog at 10 or whatever, 11 records he has, however, it's different. So I'm glad that we switched it up, because we set a precedent of people then not knowing what to expect every time we drop. Mm-hmm. However, I mean, I say the record was probably panned to a large extent because people expected us to come with this same thing. But then you got to look at it at that time. Once we came out, hell, the people started sounding like us. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying, though? Like, you look at, I mean, I'm not naming no names. You look at a lot of stuff, though, and hell, the people started sounding like us, copying us one for one. I think if you listen to No Man's Land right now, our second record, I think it aged better than 93 Till. 93 Till sounds like it's from 1993. No Man's Land sounds like it could be out right now.
Yo, that's a strong statement.
Et cetera.
Well, you guys are definitely more mature on it. But I've always wondered if the whole like turmoil of the record label, did that play a role in the chemistry or the direction you guys took for this album? Or did you make this
album? No, because we didn't know we were in turmoil. Okay. You know, like, we had Jive asking us to make music we didn't want to make, but we didn't know that we were going to be dropped, like, right after they put out the record. We were like, man, y'all invested $250,000, you know, whatever, in this. You're not just going to drop us. We didn't understand that the business runs, you know, they cut their losses when they feel like it, and we're kind of like pawns. But so it wasn't like turmoil from an internal perspective or from a label versus artist perspective. They just had a certain few songs they wanted us to do or a certain style of music they wanted us to do. And we were like, no, we're not going to do that. We'll do this. You see what I'm saying? Like, we were making money. We were traveling. We didn't have any internal issues. I mean, we're 20-plus years deep. We haven't had any breakups or any, you know, weird stuff like that happen. So I don't think that that had an effect on it. Maybe being in the industry has just a general effect because you're surrounded by rats and snakes for sure, the most part, and that kind of just, you know, wears on you. But I don't, you know, I don't think that record is jaded or, you know what I mean, though?
Like, no, I get it.
Anti-industry song or, you know, any of that kind of stuff.
I didn't know if you made it with that weighing on your mind or that came after the fact. You know, listeners, you know, us fans, we don't know.
Yeah. No, I think that's perception from outside. If it was in that record, like, if it's quote-unquote darker, as a lot of people say, or something like that.
Well, sure.
That's because of the styles of beats we were choosing. It wasn't because of the subject matter. I mean, our first album, my mom gets shot. We talking about gangs. We talking about robbing people. You see what I'm saying, though? We're talking about all kind of stuff that was sort of on our platter as teenagers growing up in Oakland. But the second album, I think it's, if you listen to the skits and the rhymes and shit, it's a little bit more lighthearted, even though it has a harder, sort of darker sound.
Darker sound.
But I think the concept of the turmoil that we're going through, we, I mean, getting dropped from the label is the best thing that could have happened to us. You know, like, I've made more money this year than I did my entire time on the record label. You see what I'm saying?
Well, Jive didn't even know what to do with the record. I think they were like grasping at, like, they didn't know what single to go with. I think you had a lot of good music, and I'm not saying that people expected you to make another Illmatic or something like that. It's not fair to compare it to the first album, but you're right. It was very dark, and I think people thought that. They didn't know you enough, because now you've made more records where you're right, they're all different. But in retrospect, it's probably like this is not what they anticipated, given what you guys were doing for the previous, you know, 2 or 3 years before this album.
Yeah. I mean, and then also I think sample clearance was kicking everybody's ass around then. Jive was people snitching on people about samples, calling in about scratches and shit. So they were kind of at the forefront for the sample clearance shit. And so I think we wanted to move away from heavily sampled music as well because it ate up most of our budget on our first record.
Sure.
You know?
Casual sampled Dr. Dre and Where the Fuck You At. That's one of my favorite
that's
cuts
right.
off
the
album, too.
We're sitting here, Tajay, we're sitting here.
I don't think Dre needs the money, though.
We're sitting here looking at the catalog, and I can't help but grab the Third Eye Vision CD in the heart of the indie era. And when I listen to this album, I get good feelings about the indie era, and I can't help but feel like there was this kind of like you guys circled back and almost revisited a similar to 93 Till sound. Not exactly, but kind of like a part two on the Third Eye Vision. Did you guys get a vibe like that?
Nah, man. I don't think Third Eye Vision sounds anything like 93. Maybe it's more sample heavy, but now we're indie, you know? So we're kind of floating over under the radar. I mean, we got popped for a couple samples on there and had to pay some money. But guess what? We had the money to pay for it because we were getting paid for our records. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? But I think that we had the same cast of characters. We always have the same cast of characters producing this. Casual, Dale, A+, Domino, you know, OPO, et cetera. And that was just the vibes we were on. So I think Third Eye Vision just came at a real good time for indie
timing.
Rap.
Timing.
And maybe people feel like it was closer to what they expected. But as far as 93 Till Infinity to Third Eye Vision, like where our minds were at, where we were in our lives and shit, were completely different. Like 93 Till Infinity, we were kids, like little kids. And you know, by the time Third Eye Vision came out, we had kids, you know?
But it sounded like you guys had more fun making that record, too.
I agree.
That's just what it sounds like, man.
Can I say where I think you guys had the most fun is, to me, not just the B-sides, but like the remixes of the singles seems like that was where you guys really were Souls or Hyro. I mean, that's where you guys kind of went outside of the box for it. Yeah, that's the way I looked at it.
That's perception. I'm not trying to push back against you. I'm just saying, if that's what it seems like, that's what it seems like. But I mean, we make records, like, we own a building and a studio. We make records all the time, and it's I don't think the feeling is any different for this one versus that one. Like, you know what I mean? Like, that's what I'm saying. Like, looking at No Man's Land from the outside and saying, hey, there was label turmoil, that shit came after we recorded the record. You know, we got a bigger budget, had fame, and we're, you know, traveling and all that. We was happy recording that record. Same with Third Eye Vision. In fact, probably with Third Eye Vision, we were like, yo, we just got to record this record. That's all we can really do right now. We don't have a label. We don't have nothing. So we're probably in a darker place with regard to finances and life decisions and all that, recording Third Eye Vision, than 93 Till or No Man's Land. You see what I'm saying? So, and then with the B-sides, it's always fun. I mean, we've been on tour now for, you know, a couple months and shit, and all we do is just make up rhyme schemes and joke and, you know, take a sound concept and all that. Like, it's no different than I could say when we were teenagers from that perspective. I think that's sort of people's perception, but it doesn't have anything to do with how our creative process, you know?
Well, that's just it, from the listener standpoint.
I'm glad it feels that way.
That's why we ask these questions, because I think we speak for a lot of the listeners that's what resonates when we listen to a No Man's Land or Focus or Third Eye Vision. Uh-huh. So, but what I want to go back to, because you did say every one of your albums kind of sounds different, and you do work with different producers. You work with Prince Paul, you know, you work with Adrian Young, on I think the last album was 2014.
There Is Only Now.
Yeah.
That was like 5 years ago.
And then you had the remix album with Ali Shaheed.
Ali Shaheed Muhammad. Yeah, so I think those records, like, you look at it, There Is Only Now, to me, that captures the sound of the 93 era way more than, say, of the Third Eye Vision. But it was purposeful. You know, I mean, we recorded it on analog, and there were no samples, but we dirtied them up, made them sound a certain way. You know, and then even with the Prince Paul, I think that, to me, was, I'm not going to say an attempt to sort of recreate 93 Till, because I think the record is completely different, but an attempt to create the conditions as far as us living all together in a house, waking up every day and working on music and not having any distractions as far as family and hustling and all that kind of stuff. So, I mean, I think regardless of the creative process, you know, if you think about fashion and style, style is temporal, right? It has to do with time, right? You know, people wore zoot suits in the 20s and 30s, right? People wear skinny motorcycle jeans and big clunky-ass shoes right now, and it has to do with the time. So I think during each one of those eras, it sort of encapsulates the style that we were on at that time. But there's always an attempt to make something classic. You know, there's a difference between fashion and style, and I think what we're trying to do is be stylistic without just being fashionable. And I think that shows in each one of the projects. But if they're taken separately, I think they all have their own kind of style. But if they're taken as a whole or a body of work, you can see sort of that we're trying to create classic style boom bap rap, you know?
Mm-hmm. Of course, yeah. You know, you spoke briefly about There Is Only Now album. I feel like you guys had like a full circle moment with A Tribe Called Quest, being that they were the group that kind of brought you out on your first tour. And then you guys get to have Shaheed be the narrator on that particular record. I mean, can you go into that and like...
You said it exactly. Like, we were saying, hey, we're making a record in 2013 that needs to sound like it's from 20 years ago. And so if you hear the way our voices are moving, our interaction, the choruses, the fact that we've got Shaheed on there, the sort of shout-outs to the different songs, like, you know, Busta Rhymes, the Womack Lament or whatever, it's got the scenario thing going, you know, or... Just a lot of stuff, I think, harks back to that era, that sort of early 90s era. And so we're thinking about Native Tongues, thinking about us being seen as the West Coast Native Tongues, having Busta Rhymes and Shaheed on the record from the Native Tongues, us kind of, you know, rhyming over these jazzy-ass beats like people expect us to do. But, you know, it was like making it in the time machine, but trying to make it current.
But the whole concept is that that record came, it was our second record down there. You know what I mean, though? Like,
yeah.
If you listen to that one right after 93 Chills, maybe in an alternate universe, that's the second album.
Yeah, strip of the samples, but kind of recreating samples from real musicians or real instruments.
Yeah, yeah. There were no samples on that record, actually. Shit. There's zero. They're not even the drums. And the only computer there was used to look at vintage polo gear and World Star.
I don't want to say you're the one who takes the most risk, but you seem to be more experimental, I should say, than some of the other members. I know you've worked with Mike Patton, who's part of my favorite group in the 80s, Faith No More, another Bay Area group. Yeah. Can you tell us a little bit about that experience? I know Automator was involved, but Mike's a legend, so for you, that had to be really, really cool to even come to fruition like that.
Yeah, man. Well, Domino and Automator hooked that up, and I really like that because instead of being the front man or instead of being like a main voice, I get to be the fly on the wall and watch how somebody else who's like a luminary in their field do their thing, and I get to kind of get to support that. So that was really cool. I will hope that, you know, there's still time to finish that product and move forward, but you know, I'm more of a Flavor Flav in that you know, in that mix. But I mean, that's great because we look at ourselves like instruments almost, so it's kind of cool to sometimes be the bass or sometimes be the drums or sometimes play guitar or just add some flavor. And I think it was really dope watching his creative process, because everybody's creative process is different. Watching Adrian Young cook, watching Shahid cook, watching Prince Paul Cook, they all are masters. And so watching those masters do what they do and them having a mutual respect and enough to put us down with that too, it's a great feeling.
Now, do you feel most comfortable with, you know, your safety blanket, which would be Domino, or do you have a particular vibe with the particular producers you just mentioned? I mean, is there one that you love the process and how they worked?
I would say working with Adrian Young was a revelation in what you can do with music. Because he was waking up every day creating some brand new music out of his brain. No samples. You know, he was drawing it from maybe some classics and things like that that, you know, that he liked or the feel that he wanted. But every day he was working on some stuff. And then by the time the end of the day had come and we had laid our rhymes and he had laid all the tracks, it just was like what began as like an idea the night before had turned into a full-blown, like, record of its own strength. You know, and that to me, that creative process, I never really dealt with anybody who did it live like that. And then he did it to the point where Shahid was doing stuff live. You know, like, he inspires others. So I would say that was my favorite thing. But, of course, working with the crew is where I feel most comfortable because they know what I want. They know what they want to hear me over, and they kind of bring it out of you because there's no filter. They could just get on my helmet and be like, oh, come on now. Come a little harder than that, you know?
Yeah, and I think being experimental is one thing, but at the end of the day, you know, being inside your comfort zone and what makes you guys so special as souls is what it's all about. And I appreciate everything tonight. I know that you're busy.
Thank you, man. I appreciate the time.
It,
good luck.
Hey, y'all be cool, man. Thanks a lot.
Yeah.
All right, I'm running here.
Be good.
But I appreciate it, man. Those are the great questions, too, man. Thank you.
Enjoy,
no problem.
Bro.
Be good. Peace.
All right. Y'all take care.
Lessons be sporting, this mental garbage, like lentil garbage. Mastic, be the last G, grammatical text to class me. Ask me, if I had to grip my band, the riffs I grab would rip and stab the kids that sad, the shit that's drab and flavors and reckless, your best misbehavior.
Thanks for keeping it locked at Take It Personal Radio. While you're here, why don't you check out some merch?